Okay. I'm going all low tech on you this morning and using books. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading this morning from the first canto, chapter 2, text 4, which is page 92, I believe, in your book. 92. Again, this is a series of 18 or 19 verses which are presented by whom in response to the questions at by the sages at Naimisharanya? Sutta Goswami, right. They're asking Sutta, the learned speaker, a series of six questions beginning with, what is the ultimate and absolute good for all people? A very open-ended question. And general question. What is the absolute and ultimate good for everyone? And they proceed to ask, now that Krishna is gone, who will protect, or what will happen to religious principles? Tell us about Krishna and his incarnations. Why does he come as a human being? So a lot of these questions are dealt with later. But the initial question is dealt with in this very beautiful spiritual poetry, which is the first, or these 19 verses from the second chapter. So the fourth verse and the 18th verse of this chapter are often recited before Srimad Bhagavatam classes. And many of you know them by heart. Some of you who are newer may not have heard them before. But after reading them here and putting them in context, I would like to encourage our speakers to use them from time to time before the Bhagavatam classes is traditionally done. All right, so let's begin with text 4 in. If we could, let's see if we can read the Sanskrit and the translation for each verse in unison. Is that all right? All right, and I'll set a little melody here, simple melody. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam udirayet. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Narayan, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Munaya sadupristoham bhavadbir lokamangalam yatkrita krishna samprashno yenatma suprasediti. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Classic Vedic way to begin. You praise the audience. Very good question. Savai pum samparo dharmo yato bhaktir hoksaje ohaituki aprati hata yayatma suprasediti. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which man can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. That was the verse Madhava Prabhu did on Wednesday. This is today's verse, actually. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayatyashuvairagyam Gyanam Cha Yodahoitukam. By rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Next 8. Dharma swanustita pumsham vishvakshena katasuyat notpadayad yadi ratim trama eva hi kevalam. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the personality of Godhead. 6:9. Dharmasya hyapavargasya narto ertayopakalpate nartasya dharmaikantasya kamolabhaya hi smritaha. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Text 10. Kamasya ninduya pritir labho jiveta yavata jivasya tattva jigyasya narto yasya karmabhi. Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation, since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. Vedante ta tatvavidas tatvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Tachchadhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pasyantyatman nijatmanam bhaktya shruta grihitaya. This seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. 13. Tat bumbir dvija shrestas varnashrama vibhagasaha svanustitasya dharmasya samsidhir haritoshanam. O best and wise form, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties and prescribed for one's own occupation according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the personality of Godhead. And this is the verse that Shyamala Kishore spoke of, right? Text 14. Tismadikena manasa bhagavan satvatam pati shotavya skirtitavyascha deya pujascha nityada. Therefore, with one pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. Yad anudyasina yukta karma granti nibantanam chindanti kovidastasya kona kuryat kataritim. With sword in hand, intelligent men cut through the binding knots of reactionary work, karma, by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to his message? Sushusho shradadhanasya vasudeva kataruchi chyan mahat sevaya vipra punyatirta nishevanat. O twice-born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the message of Vasudev. Shrinvatam swakata krishna punya shravana kirtana vidhunoti saritsatam. Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is a Paramatma and super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Here's the verse recited before class often. Nasta prayeshva bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utamas loyote bhakti bhavati naistiti. By regular attendance in classes on Bhagavatam, and by rendering a service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Tadavra jastamo bhava labho dayas jaye jeta etairanavidham vipam sate prasidati. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, his modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and the eternity. Next 20. Evam prasana manaso bhagavad bhakti yogataha bhagavad tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. Vidyate hritaya grantis chindyante sarva samshayaha shiyante chasya karmani jishya evadmanishware. Thus the knot in the heart is pierced, and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the self as master. In the last verse, a blessing. Ato vai kavayo nityam bhaktim paramaya muda vasudeve bhagavati kurvantyatma prasadanim. Certainly, therefore, since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, with great delight, because such service, is enlivening. So these verses are very sequential, although the connection is a little subtle. It's basically explaining how the process of devotional service brings one to the stage of being very attracted to hearing about Krishna. And that attraction then breaks all the attachments that we have to the material world. When those attachments are broken, then we become freed of the effects of nature's modes, such as hankering and lamentation, and then the mind becomes happy. And in that state of mind, then one can enter the Vasudev stage, the stage of pure goodness, in which one becomes thoroughly enlivened. So that is, and that's been going on since time immemorial. So here is this beautiful poetic answer to this question. What's the absolute and ultimate good for everyone? In 19 verses. Any comments on this? Questions? Okay, so that's the abhidhaya. This is pure abhidhaya. It's nothing about the soul. The sages already know that the soul is not the body. It's nothing about the position of Krishna. The sages already know he's the supreme personality of Godhead. It's just abhidhaya, applied devotional service. And ending with a hint of prayojana, the ultimate goal of love of God. Great delight from time immemorial because it's enlivening to the soul. So, if you would please turn to page 95. Before we go into today's verse, I'd just like to go back to visit this verse that Madhava Prabhu spoke on last Wednesday. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the soul. This is a very ecumenical verse. It is such a wonderful statement of spirituality. It's not a sectarian verse, in other words. He could have said, the absolute and ultimate good is Krishna and no one else. And if you don't worship Krishna, you're useless. But he says, the supreme occupation is that by which one develops love of God. And one can do that in a variety of ways. But that service then qualifies. It has to be unmotivated. In other words, not offered for return like a business deal. And uninterrupted. Not that you turn it on Sundays and then turn it off for the rest of the week. You know, constant, daily. That is the ultimate and absolute good for all people. Then that leads us to today's verse, so please turn to page 7. This is called the bonus benefits of bhakti. Text 7, page 97. Vasudeve Bhagavati.
Vasudeve Bhagavati.
Bhakti Yoga Prayojita.
Bhakti Yoga Prayojita.
Janayat Yashu Vairagyam.
Ragyam.
Jnanam Cha Yodohoitukam. Anyone else like to chant?
Vasudeve Bhagavati. Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Janayasyasu Vairagyam. Jnanam Cha Yodohoitukam.
Anyone else?
Vasudeve Bhagavati. Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Janayat Yasu Vairagyam. Jnanam Cha Yodohoitukam. Vasudeve Bhagavati. Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Vairagyam. Jnanam Cha Yodohoitukam.
Anyone else?
Vasudeve Bhagavati. Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Janayat Yashu Vairagyam. Jnanam Cha Yodohoitukam.
All right, good. Let's read the synonyms together, please. Vasudeva unto Krishna, Bhagavati unto the personality of Godhead, Bhakti Yoga, contact of devotional service, Prayojitaha, being applied, Janayat, does it produce, Ashu, Vairasun, Vairagyam, detachment, Jnanam, knowledge, Cha, and Yat, that which, O Haitukam, causes. Srila Prabhupada's translation and purport. By rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Who'd like to read the purport? Do you have any mics up? No. Okay, well, I'll start while we're getting the microphones organized. Those who consider devotional service unto to the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, to be something like material emotional affairs may argue that in the revealed scriptures, sacrifice, charity, austerity, knowledge, mystic powers, and similar other processes of transcendental realization are recommended. According to them, bhakti, or the devotional service of the Lord, is meant for those who cannot perform the high-grade activities. Okay.
Generally, it is said that the bhakti cult is meant for the shudras, vaishyas, and the less intelligent women class. But that is not the actual fact. The bhakti cult is the topmost of all transcendental activities, and therefore it is simultaneously sublime and easy. It is sublime for the pure devotees who are serious about getting in contact with the Supreme Lord, and it is easy for the neophyte who are just on the threshold of the house of bhakti. To achieve the contact of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is a great and it. Shudras.
So what to speak of the high caste men like the qualified Brahmins and the great self realized
people?
The other
high grade activities they eliminate,
sacrifice, charity, austerity, etc.,
are all corollary factors following the pure and scientific bhakti cult.
What is the meaning of the word corollary? Concomital, one that is implied by the main thing. Right, ancillary, supportive, secondary, but related. So all of these other processes have that connection with devotional service, two of which are mentioned in this particular verse. Before we move on, let me just make a couple of comments. Generally, it is said that the bhakti cult is meant for the sudras, vaishyas, and the less intelligent women class. So sudras, of course, are workers, vaishyas, businessmen, and less intelligent women class. This is the referring to people who are not in Krishna consciousness. Elsewhere in the Shastras, it is clearly said that everybody is eligible to practice Krishna consciousness. And anyone who does is an intelligent person. Anyone who doesn't is less intelligent In Kali Yuga, a sudra is even hard to find. Sudra means one who's at least observing religious principles, but working as a servant to a person in a higher position. But it is said that Kalau Sudra Sambhava, in Kali Yuga, everyone is born less than a sudra. Malechas, Yavanas, Gators, on down the line. The other kind of pejorative thing here is the word cult. Cult is a sociological term, which means a group of people who share an associated interest, and a strong interest that brings them together in language and customs and practices. So in the 70s, it became a pejorative or a critical word meant to antagonize people. You belong to a cult means you can't think for yourself, you've been brainwashed, etc. And so that word still has a great stigma with it. In fact, at this time, in a neutral sociology, it is just a definition of a group of people. We could say that Gator Nation is a cult. You know, Christianity began certainly as a cult, as did Islam. And so there is nothing wrong with belonging to a cult. If you have an interest in a particular thing and share that with other people, you're a cult member. Right? So this is the language Prabhupada is using in this, writing this purport in the Radha Damodar temple, where he has no money, no followers, nothing but his great love for Krishna and his Guru Maharaj. So he's writing these things in 1961, 62, not even sure if it'll ever be printed. And the language changes over the decades and the centuries, so if these things seem offensive to anyone, I just want to give that background. All right. Any comments or questions on that part? Tessa, Ronnie.
Purport, Giriraj Maharaj was reading the word cult several times, so we were discussing it over dinner last night. And very simply, as you said, and I remember I looked up many years ago when my mother was freaking out about me joining a cult, how I looked up the definition of the word cult in Wikipedia, and it just says that any group of people that have the same goal in mind. So like a group of people that are going to the bar together, their goal is to get wasted, you know? So that's also a cult, like any. So it's a very general term.
Very general.
Is
that true? Yes, Prabhu.
The Gators are definitely cults.
Yes. Prabhupada wrote an essay. Who is crazy? They see us chanting. And they think that we are crazy. We're actually having a lot of fun. All right. Other comments? Let's read on then. Next portion. Minka, would you like to read that? Here's the mic.
The principles of knowledge and attachment are two important factors in the path of transcendental realization. The whole spiritual process leads to perfect knowledge of everything material and spiritual, and the results of such perfect knowledge are that one becomes detached from material affection and becomes attached to spiritual activities. Becoming detached from material things does not mean becoming inert altogether, as men with a poor fund of knowledge think. Naishkarma means not undertaking activities that will produce good or bad effects. Negation does not mean negation of the positive. Negation of the non-essentials does not mean negation of the essential.
Can we stop there for just a moment? This is a little complex. So naishkarma means not undertaking activities that will produce good or bad effects. What are good effects called? Yeah, punya or good karma, you could say, and also then sinful activities are called what? Papa, punya and pap, sin or piety, and good or bad karma. So, nice karma means we recognize that whether we have good karma or bad karma, we have to come back and enjoy or suffer it, And Naishkarmya means to act in such a way that that process of birth and death is ended. Okay, so negation of the non-essentials does not mean negation of the essential. In other words, just to say, I'm not going to have anything to do with any karma, any kind of activity of this world. I'm just going to withdraw, renounce, move to a cave. There are yogis in India who sit in one place for decades. There are, to be a hermit, a renunciate, even in the West, you see people doing this. That is an attempt at detachment, which is ill-informed. I don't want to be involved in the karma anymore. I know when I was 18, I realized my parents were in Maya. Took me a while. but I thought, I don't want to interact with this illusion anymore. And so I kind of stopped talking to them, and they thought I had become insane, and it was not good for our relationship. So this is the kind of thing, if one is poorly informed, to try to be detached. One give things away, I'm just giving everything away, and I'm not going to be attached anymore. But then it doesn't really solve the problem. Or I'm going to stop talking to people, or I'm getting out of here. And this is an example from our Western terms of incomplete, uninformed detachment. Anyone else like to share any personal experiences? He called your father a rascal. I've had that experience on both ends. The caller and the callee. how do you respond?
Not really that you were a rascal, but called you that. Also, that's a part of getting my children.
Yes. Right, it's an understandable mistake. Anyone else want to come clean? Okay, here, Rupa-chan. If we have the mic, please pass it down.
I used to have many material attachments, attachment to people and bad habits like smoking. So I told myself I just want to get rid of all of these things. I went to the a forest for 3 days. I just meditated then. I was just thinking what is the purpose of life? I didn't come to any. I mean, my conclusion was that the tree is the highest, form of life because it is always giving, giving, giving. But it cannot become a tree because, so some speculation was there. But I think eventually that helped me to come to Krishna consciousness in one way also because, Mahaprabhu says, tall is like a tree.
And now you have become a desire tree, Kalpa Vrsha. All right. Anyone else had any experiences with artificial renunciation they'd like to confess to? Okay. Talk to John.
I was having a discussion with some of the Gurukulis, and I had a 47-inch LCD, really nice television, and I gave it away, and one of the Gurukulis is like, "Well, you're a false renunciate," and I was like, okay, and he's like, "You could have used that television in Krishna's service," and I wasn't really aware of that at the time, and now seeing that, somewhere one of the preaching centers could have greatly benefited from that, but I gave it to family members, so I didn't really know that at the time, so I didn't really think it was a bad thing. It was just something I used to watch movies and play video games on. So I thought it was, bad in that aspect. But, if I'd have known it could have been used in this context, it would have probably went to an ISKCON community or temple.
Yes, this is very good. This is an example, trying to be detached without complete knowledge. All right, so let's go on to the other side of this, the knowledge side. Please go on.
I'm sorry, where do I start?
When the positive form. Okay. The bhakti cult is meant for...
Okay. The bhakti cult is meant for realization of the positive form. When the positive form is realized, the negative forms are automatically eliminated. Therefore, with the development of the bhakti cult, with the application of positive service to the positive form, one naturally becomes attached from inferior things, and he becomes attached to superior things. Similarly, the bhakti cult, being the supermost occupation of the living being, leads him out of material sense enjoyment. That is a sign of a pure devotee. He is not a fool, nor is he engaged in the inferior energies, nor does he have material values. This is not possible by dry reasoning. It actually happens by the grace of the Almighty. In conclusion, one who is a pure devotee has all other good qualities, namely knowledge, detachment, etc. But one who has only knowledge or detachment is not necessarily well acquainted with the principles of the bhakti cult. Bhakti is the supermost occupation of the human being.
The purports for all of these verses become like old friends when you read them and reread them over the years. Such nice language, just nice phrases. So Prabhupada is describing how the devotee is not attached to material things, automatically becomes detached, and does so by dint of positive devotional service. That also is not possible, he says, by dry reasoning. You remember last week we read in a purport, the impersonalists hover aloft in the mental sphere. So has anyone ever taken philosophy courses? Right. So Andy, what was your experience? Yeah. That was very well spoken, well succinct. Very succinct. So this is the problem with just trying to understand the absolute truth through the mental processes. The problem is there's no connection with the heart. There is no... It's all a game of logic and debate and angles, and it has nothing to do with transformation and resolving one's unhappiness. It doesn't really address that. It's not meant to. It's all theoretical. And the consequence of that is that there is no standard for knowledge, that every muni, it is said in the Shastras, every muni has his own philosophy. So everybody will have their own take on what is the truth. And that is, it is like polishing the cage of the bird and not feeding the bird. You know, it just doesn't make one happy. The knowledge that a devotee gains, however, is very complete. I mean, have you met people as knowledgeable about their traditions as some of the devotees you've met? You'll hear people with such a great erudition and so much to say. I don't want to offend anybody, but you know, I enjoy inviting my colleagues from other religious centers here on campus in, partially for that reason, because the students can see, wow, the speakers we have at Krishna House really know their stuff. And it's also an experience of life, not just this is my belief. You know, or this is why I practice this. So we are not really interested in defeating people philosophically, although devotees are pretty tough when it comes to philosophical debate. You know, but there's a story of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. The two elders were Rupa and Sanatan. So one philosopher came into Vrindavan with the goal of defeating all other philosophers, which was sort of like the football of its time. You know, that was the big sporting event. The philosopher would come in and debate, and whoever won the debate would get the other person to sign their book so they could show, I have defeated this one, I have defeated this one. So this philosopher came into Vrindavan and heard that Rupa and Sanatan were the most learned. So he went to Rupa Goswami and said, I challenge you to a debate. He said, I have no time for your foolish debate. I'm busy with my Krishna consciousness. So then sign my book. Yes, I'll sign your book. Now go away. Sanatan said the same thing. So then this pandit was going around Vrindavan. See, I have defeated Rupa and Sanatan. So when Jiva Goswami, the younger, their nephew, heard this, he immediately challenged this pandit to a debate. So Jiva Goswami, even by modern philosophers in universities, is known as the greatest philosopher in the history of the world. So he lacerated this foolish person and made him tear out that page which he had Rupan Sanatan's signature. So then he took it to Rupan Sanatan, see what this foolish debater was doing using your name. But Rupa was very upset about this. He said, why are you wasting your time debating like this? Our business is hearing and chanting and researching the revealed scriptures. So you don't deserve to stay in Vrindavan. Then he actually banished Jiva Goswami from Vrindavan. He had to live on the precincts of Vrindavan. He was very distraught. So later on Radhastami, Sanatan Goswami approached Rupa Goswami and said, you know, today is Radhastami, yes. And on Radhastami, one should be kind to all jivas, yes. So we should let Jiva back into Vrindavan. The point is that when a younger devotee takes up a debate, like you might encounter somebody who says, this Krishna consciousness is no good, Jesus is the Lord, or something like that. If you try to debate them, it's like a tar baby. You know, it's a morass. It's not our process. It doesn't work. It doesn't touch the heart. It's said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the principles of spirituality are not established by logic and debate, but they are established by what? The behavior of the devotees. So it doesn't behoove a devotee to logically try to present Krishna consciousness in order to convince somebody who has no spiritual interest. That's the point. That's actually an offense to the holy name, the ninth offense, to speak to faithless people. That usually begins with friends and relatives. You know, they're not looking at us and saying, oh, you look awfully happy. They're looking at us and saying, what are you doing with your life? You know, what are you going to be when you're 40 years old? Or such things. And if we try to say, no, it says in the Bhagavad Gita, sarvadharmam parichaja, just surrender. That just reinforces their concern, right? Yeah, right. So this is analogous to Jiva's argument, arguing with his pundit. The Bible has a thing, don't present pearls before swine. I mean, I don't want to criticize anybody. But the point is, you deal with people appropriate to their level of interest and realization. If somebody calls and says, I'm really suffering in the material world, I really want to understand your spiritual experience, that's the kind of person we can present Bhagavad Gita to. But if somebody is looking at it skeptically, then we just treat them like a normal human being. That is actually the higher way of presenting Krishna consciousness. So we don't have to convince people who don't want to be convinced. They can't. A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. You know, so it's true. We can present with all logic and reason why Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They don't have an alternative, but they still say that Krishna is not God. We'll say, well, then who is? Well, I don't know, but it's not Krishna. You know, is that logical? I mean, that's fanatical, isn't it? It's closed-minded, narrow-minded, and the natural response to that is you want to get a pair of pliers and pry that mind open. But it's difficult to do if somebody doesn't have a sense of something missing in their life. So those people are plentiful, people who are feeling frustrated from every walk of life and every situation. And Krishna will send them to you. You don't have to worry about trying to change somebody who's not so inclined into having that inclination. In other words, knowledge is a byproduct of bhakti. It's a byproduct. It's not what we're all about. Srila Prabhupada was given this title by his godbrothers, Bhakti Vedanta, because he was rich in devotion and Vedanta and knowledge. So it's an attribute of a devotee to have knowledge. A devotee is not a fool. But at the same time, even the illiterate Brahmin sitting on the steps of the temple who could not read but had so much feeling for Krishna, envisioning him sitting on the chariot with Arjuna, so much that he was shedding tears, Lord Chaitanya said, you are the actual knower of Bhagavad Gita, not all these pandits who can memorize the verses but don't understand the inner meaning. So, knowledge and renunciation. These are two bonus benefits of bhakti. They come of their own accord. They are causeless. One who renders devotional service immediately acquires, causeless knowledge and detachment. Causeless knowledge and detachment. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are four seed verses, essential verses. What chapter are they in? 10th chapter. So, one of them, the 10th verse of the 10th chapter is what? Anyone can recite it? Tesham tananam bhajatam pritipurvakam didami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. To those who render devotional service to me, I give them the knowledge by which they can come to me. And then the next verse. I, sitting in their heart, remove all their obstacles. This is Krishna's promise. These are considered the essential verses of Bhagavad Gita. We don't approach Krishna because of our great learning. That happens only very rarely, although it's a wonderful thing if it does. But rarely does one come to the point of approaching Krishna out of knowledge. Usually it's out of what?
Distress,
fear, poverty, yeah, some kind of problem. At that point, one says, oh, God, I'm so fed up. You know, I don't want this world anymore. Detachment, right? Please enlighten. If somebody calls out to God with great sincerity like that, then Krishna will help them, bring them to devotional service. This is the point. But if someone has not come to that point, then they're not going to find it very easy to appreciate. So let's talk about us as devotees. Are we experiencing causeless knowledge and detachment? What do you think? Is this working for you? Anyone like to say? Can anyone give any examples of experiencing causeless knowledge or detachment? Or is this just bogus? No example? Yes. Is that on?
Trying to logically convince ourselves about Krishna consciousness, and you can run on that for a little while because there are some little, you know, clever sayings we can use on our minds, but it's dry eventually, and then we kind of, it fades out, you know, and then, like, you want to stay in Krishna consciousness because there is some attraction. There's so many attractive aspects of it. So you start to realize that it has to be practical, like, you know, actually doing devotional service, like practical devotional service, practical in that it's within your nature, whatever you're doing, what kind of services you're doing, and sadhana, you know, daily practice, like we're talking a set number of rounds a day, and you're doing that, and then that's when the real experience comes. It can, you can read all day. I know so many, I have so many friends who told me, I have a really good friend who's from South India. He told me, and he can recite the whole Bhagavad Gita left and right. But he said that he had no idea the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. All the conclusions that Prabhupada gives in the Bhagavad Gita, he said none of those even, you know, phased him. You know, he never saw that before. So I can see that by practical example that, like, you know, the real Krishna consciousness is not, you know, read, you know, like logic and all this thing. It's really simple. It's you have to take a really simple-hearted approach to it.
I like that, yes. In other words, devotional service means doesn't mean you don't live a normal life. In the society in which you live, you can be a completely functional member of society, but your purpose is different. Why are you doing it? You know, I have a friend who was a medical student, and he said that he learned all about medical science, how the body works, but until he read Bhagavad Gita, he didn't understand why the body works. You know, what is it? Why does it exist? I don't know. It just exists. Let's study it. You know? But that is a more foundational question. You know, why are we in this body? Why is it happening? Bhagavad Gita addresses that very deep level. So your life can be lived in a much deeper way, but externally it doesn't have to be that different. That's the knowledge. Yes, that's very good. Okay, other comments? Are you getting knowledge or detachment? Yes, Krishna, the seeker.
Well, I guess twofold. It's like ever since I've come to Krishna consciousness, it's prior to this. I mean, I'd been hitting a lot of roadblocks whenever I would go to other religious centers and try to learn their version of what they called the truth. It's in some cases it was, well, you need to be here for X amount of years, and then maybe we'll let you know you need to advance further, you need to give us more money, you need to, you know, you need to renounce everything and believe in nothing, and then truth will come to you. It's actually, when up in Nashville this weekend, it's Franco and I were touring the different booths, and we came across the Scientologists who Franco got into a bit of a debate with concerning whether or not it was a pay-to-learn sort of thing. And they explained it as, in order to advance in Scientology, you need to pay for the classes. And the more you want to advance, the more classes you have to take. And he said, therefore, you have to pay more money. And they said, no, well, but don't churches need money? And he said, well, why can't you tell me now? Well, because you can't take the classes here. And so it's, I mean, yeah, it really is. And it's...
If they asked us that question, we'd say, it's Krishna, it's Krishna.
Exactly. And I mean, they gave me a stress test, and it was a bit of a farce. But that being said, I mean, it's just seeing the disparity between Krishna consciousness and we'll just say Scientology. It's for them, you have to pay in order to learn. And Krishna consciousness, you have to serve.
That's an excellent example. We don't want to criticize anybody. Anyone who has some spiritual interest in general, we want to encourage them. That's great. But yes, your point is very well taken. So that was the devotees were happy to give you as much knowledge as you wanted, free of charge, very happily, enthusiastically.
Within the first 5 minutes, here's the truth. Enjoy.
Okay, and they haven't stopped yet. Tulsi, Ron?
I would say that the greatest experience in Krishna consciousness I've had of knowledge and causeless knowledge and detachment is when I'm out trying to share the beauty of Krishna consciousness with others. Just for example, this weekend I was talking to so many really nice people, and so often things will come out of my mouth and I'm like, whoa, that sounded really good. Where did it come from? And I know, and because my heart is really wanting to, like, help these people to find happiness, not necessarily according to my religion, but to find happiness, you know. And then so many things come out of my mouth, and I'm like, wow, that's causeless knowledge, because, you know. And then also the detachment comes because you get a taste of how wonderful it is to actually be helping other people, not just physically or emotionally, but really from in their hearts. To actually see them really finding some happiness just in a conversation or whatever. And then the detachment comes from that. The causeless knowledge first and then the causeless detachment. Because then, like, you see so many things, meat booths, alcohol booths, things going on. Even there was a really good bluegrass band playing, which is totally my Maya. And I was like, no. I think I'm just, part of me was like, oh, maybe I'll take a break and go listen to that really good music. But I was like, no, I just want to keep distributing these books. And so the detachment, I feel like it comes so naturally because that higher taste is there. Krishna consciousness is just so wonderful.
That's the thing. Very nice example. Thank you. Prabhupada used to say that you want to enjoy, but you do not know how to enjoy. Anandamaya Vyasa, that means every soul is seeking pleasure. And Prabhupada said, yes, we're seeking pleasure, but we don't know how to find it. So it's a higher taste. That's the principle of detachment, not just by saying, I give it all up, but by relishing and increasing one's taste for the holy name. That was explained in this section also, as you recall. That's the means by which one cuts the attachment to the material world, this labyrinthine knot. By that intense taste. So all we say in Krishna consciousness is that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to cultivate taste. We may be here with our taste. We may be there with our taste. It doesn't really matter. A devotee appreciates every devotee, whatever level they're at, if they're progressing in their, towards their, the goal of loving Krishna. And yeah, that way one can be detached. We don't have to worry about anyone else's situation. Just how much is my own attachment for Krishna growing? Another kind of detachment. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Other comments? Anything? Yes, Shyamala? Pass the mic, please.
I was thinking about how Vaisheshika Prabhu came to North Carolina recently. He gave an instructory class on how to distribute books. And he was saying that it's really important that if someone gives you that cold shoulder, like right off the bat, that you don't push it and you don't try to go against that and like, oh, you really need this and kind of that. And I was thinking how, especially it seems like at this time in history, people are especially resistant to being shoved things down their throat. And especially religion, it seems like it's a really sensitive issue now. Just from what I've observed, especially in my generation. And so it's a good, I like what you said about that. And just sharing it out of joy instead of out of like, you need this and there's nothing better, and, you know, that kind of mood. So.
Yes, that's so true. And this is a hallmark of a devotee whose advancement is not so mature. That in order to verify one's own faith, one has to see others. And so it becomes more of a control thing. No, you gotta do this. You gotta believe. And it just gets harder and harder. Back in the 70s, I'll quote some Shastra here. Mad Magazine had a wonderful cartoon. There was a picture of a devotee meeting a passenger at the airport in the first panel. And the second panel is this scuffle, this cloud of dust with fists sticking out here and foot sticking out there. And the third panel, the passenger has a book protruding from his throat. And the devotee is walking away with a stack of bills. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So that was the unfortunate reputation that these... Because we were all such, you know, inexperienced young men and women. You know, I mean, when Prabhupada passed away, there were maybe a half dozen devotees who were in their 30s. You know, and he left the movement in the hands of those and people in their 20s. People I probably wouldn't have loaned my car keys to. and that's the great power of the holy name. We don't have to, if we're enjoying it, what does it matter to us if somebody else doesn't want it? That's their misfortune. If we're actually enjoying it, Krishna consciousness, what does it matter? If somebody, if they don't like it, then they'll still benefit. Let me smile, wish them a happy day, you know, and just be content within myself. Okay, anything else? Sashi, you have any realizations on this point?
Like, generally also, Krishna consciousness makes you so busy that you don't think about other things. Like, you get, like, affection towards it and you feel like, okay, for example, if I want to, like, buy something, this is just an example, like an iPod. So I think, okay, maybe next week I would buy. But next week also I'm busy in doing this because I don't want to stop this because this is like so attractive. And I buy, okay, after 1 month. Okay, 1 year passes, but I don't buy because there's no time because you are like so busy in this and like so much engaged. I always have this experience, like so many things.
That's good. I'm glad you've become detached from the terrible sense gratification of buying an ironing board. This is... But it's your point is well taken. Yes, if we're enjoying devotional service, then things that used to seem so important, they become a little less.
Like so many things, doing some other work or something like.
Yes.
The starting for that, it's like getting delayed, you know, like because you have so much fun here. And many of my friends ask me, like, whatever you're doing now, you should be enjoying now. You should do all this in the age of, like, 50s or something. Why are you starting now? What is wrong with you? Like, this is all what you should do in your age of 50. You should enjoy now.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like this is real enjoyment. Like, this is the most important thing which you have to do.
Mm.
And, like, I keep telling one thing, like, the soul which you have that really seeks pleasure from everywhere. But then... The I mean, what pleasure you're giving it, that is most important, and that your intelligence tells you, and that you get only when you realize, like, when you have self-realization, when you when you remove all your impurities, when you slowly remove impurities, then you will realize, like, what is, like, the real pleasure for my soul. Mm-hmm. Only then, because everything is temporary and everything is, like, going away, so that is not, like, your real happiness. So I always, like, help, my friends or someone. Like, usually my friends who were, like, with me in Masters, they keep asking me, are you still in Gainesville? Are you still, doing the same thing, doing your spiritual thing? I mean, that's, like, so funny. But my parents are, like, positive about it. Uh-huh. So.
You are very fortunate. Yeah, that's nice. Okay, so it's simply a process of recreation only, Prabhupada said. Menka, you want to make a last comment there?
Just one last thing. One thing I realized in Krishna consciousness, it's like what Gandhi said, be the change you want to see, right? It's not like you're pushing it onto others. You're just imbibing the qualities, and then people will see that everywhere else, you know? Like, because once you start to force it upon, even psychologically, once you start to force upon other people, you lose it, that automatically it loses, like, the heart-to-heart connection,
you know?
It's kind of like pushing it on to other people without, it's more of a mind thing then rather than a heart.
Yes.
But then when you're just, like, you know, representing all the good qualities, it's just automatically this attraction from you is just, it's like this aura, you know, of amazing qualities, and people just see it automatically.
That is our task in Krishna consciousness, how to become happy. That's all we need to figure out. So what makes us happy in devotional service? That should be our pursuit. That's a legitimate question. It's not a selfish question. It's a legitimate question. And that's a great step forward in your Krishna consciousness, to discover what it is that makes you happy serving Krishna. That's self-realization, actually. So, in this way, bhakti brings knowledge and detachment. Right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.